Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Frank Farmer Loomis Show here on WMKV and WLHS. I'm Frank Farmer Loomis, your host. And I am delighted to have on our guests on our show today from Grove City, Ohio, Mr. Steve Jackson. He's just back from a holiday in the British Isles. Steve, thank you for being on the show today.
My pleasure to be with you, Frank.
I don't even know where to begin. This is so absolutely terrific. What you guys have done up there. Give us your web address first so people can make sure we get that across so they can.
Gladly. We're grovecityhistory@gmail.com.
Good.
Grovecityhistory@gmail.com.
Well, when I was getting ready for you, looking at all your information you sent me and everything, the two-story brick houses, it looks like to me from your excellent photographs, it's like in an area that's like a subdivision that was built around it. Is that correct?
That is correct. It once was about a 1,000-acre farm, but like so much of central Ohio over the years, that farmland has slipped away, and today the house sits on 2 acres.
Well, I think that's great. Steve, do you want to just start at the beginning, like 6 generations of the Grant family? And Mike wants to know if Cary Grant was related to, but you do have Hugh Grant in there too, don't you?
Well, actually, we have Ulysses S. Grant.
Okay.
Ulysses
best
Grant
one to have.
And the first of the 6 generations, Hugh Grant, were cousins. They both came out from the Pittsburgh area at the same time in 1805, 1806. And the family was actually very early settlers in the United States, both Ulysses and R. Hugh, having come to Connecticut in 1630 and then eventually moved out to western Pennsylvania. So that's our claim to fame, I guess.
It's a pretty wonderful one because it seems to me now finally U.S. Grant is getting everything that he should have been credited for all along.
I absolutely agree with you. Hugh is... I'm sure was proud of him, and I'm equally proud of Ulysses. I think he did some phenomenal accomplishments, and not just as a Civil War general, but
right.
also as a president of the United States. I think he sometimes gets short shrift.
Yeah, he certainly does. And I know you're a high school history teacher. Did you read that biography of U.S. Grant that came out last November?
I did, and I enjoyed every page of
what,
it.
Wasn't, Steve, wasn't that an incredible book?
Not only a nice piece of history, but also a very well-written book.
It was.
Together nicely.
And he was such a great man because when I was in junior high, which was probably about the same time you were, maybe I was a little earlier, they always skip General Grant. You know, he you know, presidency and everything. And
I think probably that's a major oversight because I think Grant did a lot to put the nation back on its feet after the Civil
right.
War. Like all of us, he had his faults and made some mistakes, but all in all, I think his... accomplishments are pretty admirable.
It really
and of course,
is.
At the Grant House, we think the same thing.
Right.
So.
Well, I just feel so humbled and lucky to live in the same county where he was born nearby and grew up. So tell us, so this was in the 6 generations of the Grant family.
Yes. The Grants came to Chillicothe by way of the Zane Trace
mm-hmm.
in 1805. They stayed the winter there. They had purchased part of a land grant. They were Indianians, so they were not, Pennsylvanians. They were not eligible to get a Virginia military grant, which the area around Columbus was all Virginia military grants.
Mm-hmm.
And they purchased a grant and came here and got to Chillicothe. It was winter, so they waited till spring. Came up the Scioto that goes up through the center part of the state to Columbus and beyond, and found approximately where they thought their land grant was, and built a very rude little shelter there, and began looking for it. And Hugh, the first generation, was out hunting. He saw a beehive up in a tree, good time to get some honey. Climbed up into the tree rather high up, and either the branch broke or he slipped and he fell to his death. And left his wife, who we have no portrait of, unfortunately. We
mm-hmm.
have lots of photographs and portraits, but not hers. She was a phenomenal character worthy of a novel or a movie, I think.
Is that Virginia Barr Grant?
That is Virginia Barr Grant, exactly right.
Well, no, you told me. Tell us about her.
Was there stranded on the banks of the Scioto, where fortunately there's now a park So at least that part of the area still looks like it pretty much did when she arrived, and had no idea really where the land grant was. She had five children with her, several teenagers and several younger than that.
Well, she was in trouble.
She was pregnant for the sixth.
Oh, boy.
And somehow this woman managed to find the property. She and her teenage sons cleared it. She never married again. They built eventually a log home, not a cabin, but it was a fair-sized house. And they put the farm into production, and she gave birth to the sixth child, and all six children grew to adulthood.
Rare for those
she
days.
She lived for 31 more years, and she lived long enough to build the house that's now called the Grant Sawyer Home.
Was that built in 1830? Am I right?
It was built in 1830. National Register has verified that. When it was built, there was virtually nothing around except a few log cabins. This is long before the town of Grove City was established. One of the very first brick houses built in our area.
It's a palace
and,
for those
the brick
days.
Was dug, the clay was dug on the site and fired on the property, and the house was built out of timber that was cut on the property. And it's a sort of a simple federal style, 5-over-4 Virginia T format house. However, it was 1830, and the Greek Revival was coming along, and you may have noticed in the photographs there, we have a rather nice Greek Revival front porch on the house. So the grants, I guess, were making a point that they did know what was going on elsewhere outside of the area they were living in.
This is so cool. I want to just make sure I understand this. So Hugh Grant, was he the cousin of U.S. Jesse Grant then?
Yes.
The actually, father?
It was Hugh and U.S. Grant's father were cousins.
Okay, Jesse. I think his name. Okay.
Jesse Hiram Grant and Hugh were the same generation.
Okay, all right. And so they were the same generation. Yes, because that was, looking at your pictures, my God, that was a palace for 1830.
Yes, all of the existence of that house, and it's really, I mean, it's a nice-sized house, but it's not gigantic.
No.
It's about 1,700 square feet, three
it's
rooms
a lovely
down,
house.
Three rooms up,
it's a lovely
and one room
house.
In the cellar, and four working fireplaces, or had been working fireplaces. Most of them are sealed up now, but they look like they would work. But the house was, it was considered quite a mansion for a long, long time. And although there were bigger houses eventually built, it always maintained a certain mystique in town, even in its last years when it was beginning to get a little deteriorated.
You know, you never can go wrong with federal architecture.
No. Then Hugh's son, the baby that was his mother was carrying at the time of his death, was the one who inherited property because the other boys had acquired land elsewhere in the Grove City area. So he inherited the home place. And then his son, Adam Gabriel Grant, lived there for about 50 years, and Adam Gabriel was a big man about town. He was a banker and owned the brickworks and was an engineer and a long, long list of accomplishments. Very generous man as well. And when he died in 1913, they went to the fourth generation, who was his son, John. And John lived there for about 15 years, and then he turned it over to, it changes to a female line of inheritance. It went to his daughter, Relief, Catherine Grant, and then when she died, it went to Ruth Grant Sawyer Gibbeton.
Uh-huh.
And she lived there some total off and on, but most of the time, for 94 years. She was moved in when she was 4 years old with her parents, and she walked out the front door 94 years later when she turned it over to the city and the Historical Society.
What a great story. I bet that house is full of wonderful vibes to it.
It's worth full of wonderful vibes.
Some good-looking furniture,
too. We
all kind
of wondered about that when we were starting the restoration.
Uh-huh.
But the house has a very happy feel. I think the house is happy with what has happened to it. Ruth, the last generation, wanted the house restored to the 1830-1840 time period on the outside. She wasn't quite sure which of the two dates were the construction.
Uh-huh. Well, they're both sort of similar.
Then she wanted the inside done 1840 to 1880. That was the time period of
Perfect.
Hugh the Second and Adam, the beginning of Adam Gabriel Grant's tenure in the House. And that's when the period that we had the most antique pieces from. So.
Do I hear a clock chiming in the background?
Yes, you do.
Can you do that again? That's General Grant saying hello to us.
I'm talking to you from my study upstairs in my home.
Oh, that was wonderful.
I stopped the clocks that were closest to me.
I love it. You know, if you were talking to us from London, we'd hear Big Ben in the background.
Yes, I guess. That's as close as to Big Ben as you're going to get around here.
So. No, that's a great story. So, Steve, so the woman was 94 years old when she moved into the house. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
And she walked out the front door at 94 and gave the keys to the city.
Actually, 98.
She 98, right? I can't add.
Do
you remember when I wrote a book way back, and you came to my book signing, and you were so sweet? He was so sweet to correct me. I'm going to get even with you. No, he was very nice. I learned that George II was not the son of George I, but the grandson. Or do I have George and second and third mixed up? Remember, you wrote me a lovely letter correcting me.
I think George II was George I's son.
Son, and it was the third.
And
it was the grandson.
George I, and George III was George II's grandson.
Right.
The Prince of Wales was Frederick, and he died young.
I appreciate it. Steve, can you hold on for next segment? We can talk some more.
I would be happy to. So
good.
I'll sit here quietly until you come
back. And fix that clock. I have it chime for us again. We're talking to Mr. Steve Jackson from Grove City, Ohio, talking about the Grant Sawyer House, which he has worked very hard on and with friends of his to restore, and it's open to the public. I'm Frank Farmer Loomis. You're listening to the Frank Farmer Loomis Show here on WMKV and WLHS. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Frank Farmer Loomis, your host on Keep Antiquing here. And we are talking to Mr. Steve Jackson from Grove City, Indiana. And just a reminder, we all know that General Grant was born 5 miles east of New Richmond on the Ohio in Point Pleasant, and he grew up in Georgetown. Steve, thank you for holding on. We have a rule here that callers come first before you, and I think that this caller would like to talk to you, okay?
That's fine.
Thank you. Go ahead, Becky.
Hi.
Hi.
Mr. Jackson?
Yeah.
I am so impressed with your knowledge of history, and I'm just, you know, enthralled with all of this. I'm actually a descendant of Ulysses Grant.
And very proud of it, I'm sure.
I'm very, very proud of it, yes. Ulysses Grant is my great-great-uncle. And I think it is just wonderful that you all have taken the time and the energy and all to, you know, put things back together for this home. And I was wondering, do you do tours or, you know, what would the hours be and so forth?
I would be glad to tell you. The house is open to the public, and it is opened on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. From 10 to 2, we do 4 tours a day. Each tour is about an hour. The tours are limited to a maximum of 10. There's no minimum. You can come one individual person,
can
only take 10 people a day for each tour because of our upstairs hallway is rather narrow. And how you get your spot on a tour is you simply call our museum, the city museum. And the phone number is 614-277-3061. That number is 614-277-3061. And we're an easy drive right up 71 here
right.
In Grove City, Ohio. We are, you simply get off at the route of the mile number 100 exit. And follow your GPS, and you'll be right at our place. You can either park across the street, or you can park behind. There's a parking area behind the house.
And I was also wondering, would you be open to any kind of donations as far as period pieces or, you know, things like that?
We are open to donations. That's a good question because All the contents of the house are either 25% are family items.
Well, that's great.
About 35% of the furniture, or 40%, are items that came from other families in the Grove City area. Everything in the house is between 1840 and 1880. We're very rigid on that. And then the remaining items are what we call here in Columbus Darby Valley pieces. The Darby Valley, which is Darby Creek, is a national river that flows around the west side of Columbus. And the four counties that make up that area, Pickaway, Franklin, and Madison, and Union. And that area was all settled by Virginians. Now, you know, our family was Pennsylvanians, but they were rare. Most of the people that settled that area were Virginians. And craftsmen in that area pretty much made the same style of things
right.
during the pioneer period. So if we can't find, we'll say, a drop leaf table and we need one and there's not one available that's got a pedigree from Grove City, or it's not a family piece, then we'll buy something from that area that has a history in that area, with the understanding that we'll use it for the time being, but if a local piece comes along, we'll sell it and put the local piece in.
Okay, so you might even take something on loan or something.
We'll take loans. We prefer gifts, but we do have a few items that are loaned.
Steve and Becky, do you know the story about Clement Conger, the curator of the White House from Pat Nixon to the first term of Nancy Reagan? He would always get the museums and people to loan something to the White House, and then he would schmooze them into having them give it to the White House.
Well, I don't want to make any confessions on the air, but we've probably done a certain amount of schmoozing ourselves.
Well, yeah, I love that, because they called him the Grand Acquisitor. You know.
Well, speaking of the White House, thank you for my prod. The company that the firm that did our restoration, Schooley Caldwell, does the state capitol here in Columbus. Mm. They're responsible for it. Do three other state capitols: mm-hmm. Thomas Jefferson's campus at the University of Virginia.
That he
very
designed, yeah.
Good pedigree for restoration projects. We are the smallest project they ever did, because just a simple one house. Usually they do more than that. But anyway, they always assign a historian to vet everything that you do.
Uh huh.
And the historian that vetted our project, including on the last day before we had our opening, the big debate we were having as to what kind of tablecloth we should have on the dining room, since we had it set for late luncheon or tea, I had a phone number to call, and or I could email, and I would get a response back. When the guy that did the responding was a man by the name of William Seal, and many of your listeners may not recognize the name, but they
yep.
all will recognize the address.
He loved
he
Pat
the
Nixon.
He was the historian at 1600 Pennsylvania
yeah.
Avenue.
He loved Pat Nixon and Clement Conger.
Yes, and I never did quite get over getting emails that began White House, Washington, D.C.
Yeah, that is quite a name to drop. And I think that's quite a wonderful problem to have about the tablecloth, Steve, because I want to tell you, you could have been trying to find a bigger pot under a leaky roof or somebody, you know, in an old house.
You're absolutely
so
correct.
So what type of tablecloth? Don't tell me. I'm going to go out on a limb. Did they pick a plain white cotton one?
Plain white cotton for the meal, and uh-huh. then either a bare top or a lace tablecloth for the dessert or tea course. So
what's
we
a bare top, Steve? I'm
lace
sorry.
One, and that's the one we
oh.
use.
What's a bare top? Oh, bare tabletop?
Nothing on it all.
Oh, God, what a dumb question that was. Oh.
little bears, Frank.
Well, that's what I was thinking.
Teddy bears.
Well, now, what china did you use to serve dessert?
We have four sets of china.
Good
that,
for you.
For the house. They're all of the period.
Uh-huh.
We have a green version of the Lincoln.
You're kidding.
Grant china with the band around the outside.
And the eagle in the center?
In Lincoln's case, kind of a purpley-red shade.
Oh,
and
my
Grant
gosh.
Had pink.
Yeah.
We have the same thing, but in a dark green.
How cool is that?
And then we have an 1878 rose pattern
mm-hmm.
That we use, and we have an 1880 pattern that's with daffodils that we use in the spring.
Cool.
And then in the fall, we have one that is kind of assorted flowers, but they're in rusts and browns, etc. So.
Becky, do you want to ask? You asked some really good questions and about how to get there. Did you have any other questions for him?
Well, I would kind of like to backtrack. I think it's so interesting to think. Now, let me ask you: did they change? This sounds silly, maybe, but did they change the tablecloths? Like you said, that you had a lace tablecloth for dessert. Did
mm-hmm.
they take the white cotton off and replace
well,
that?
Question.
Is that how that worked?
In a big household, they probably would, where they had servants, they probably would have. I suspect that in the household, and although we're pretty sure that they had some domestic help, this was, after all, a prosperous family, but not aristocratic family by any stretch of the imagination.
Mm-hmm.
And we suspect that what they started the meal with, they ended with, but we really don't know. It's just a guess on our part.
That's good.
All right. Well, I understand that you are or were a history teacher, and I think
that is
you're
correct.
Just the perfect person for this, and I just enjoyed this.
I taught European and American history and English also for 46 years, and then I also did a little work for Urbana University as an adjunct professor there from time to time.
But
well,
you have found, excuse me, Becky, I'm sorry, you've found your forte. We can hear it in your voice.
Well, you know, the funny thing, Frank, is my original intention was to be a restoration architect.
Well, you did it.
When I went to college long, long ago, that was a very narrow field.
Right.
My father persuaded me that education was probably the route to go, and I loved my career.
Yeah.
But in all the goodness that happens sometimes in life, the first thing I did after I retired was restore the house, chair the committee for that. So I guess I got to do what I wanted to start out with.
So are you okay, Becky?
I'm great, and I have my calendar out, and I'm going to get this scheduled. I have got to see this beautiful home.
I'd love to see it.
Very,
too.
Very nice.
Well, thank you for calling, Becky.
Well, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Steve.
Bye, Becky.
Bye-bye. Thanks, Becky. We got John on the line who wants to talk to you, Steve. I'm telling you, you are so low-key that this man, Steve Jackson, they had William Seal, this god in the world of antiques. He's up there with Wendell Garrett. And everything. That is true. I bet he was as nice as he could be.
Absolutely charming. Absolutely charming.
And in fact, maybe I'm going to ask you about that some other time, but I know that he loved Pat Nixon because I've, Steve, don't laugh at me. I'm writing another book, and Pat Nixon is.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, well, I'm doing a little better job on checking my facts, Steve. Oh, there it is. Hear it,
yes.
Steve, do not think. I thought it was the sweetest thing that you wrote that letter to me, correcting me. I thought it was great. Steve, can we just do one more interview with you?
You want to say hi to John real quick?
Yeah, we want to say hi to John. Can you stay on, Steve?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I knew you would be terrific. I should have told you it would be longer, but just in case, let's have John on. John, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Are you all excited about this house?
I'll try to be as quick as possible.
No, you talk all you want to. Talk all you want
about,
to.
About Ulysses S. Grant. He is a back cousin. I wish I had the chart with me. I had a cousin that traced our family.
Uh-huh.
And, he'd go to graveyards and courthouses and things of that nature. And it turns out his, I know I'm going to get this wrong.
Don't worry.
His mother, his aunt. McMath. The McMath family is, I believe, his mother's maiden name or his aunt's maiden name, something of that nature. And he's a back cousin, like I say.
Uh-huh.
Also included in that are Virginia McMath.
Ah.
Better known as Ginger Rogers.
Oh, Ginger Rogers, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Gosh. That's a great... Yeah. Story. Do you want to hold on while we take a break, John, or do you have to go? You want to talk some more to Steve? Or
No, I'm fine. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for calling. Virginia McGrath, I think, was Ginger Rogers' name. Steve, when we come back, will you tell us, and I'll try to not talk so much, tell us about how you got involved with this and everything, because it's just been recently that all this has been transpiring, right?
Yes, the last 3 years.
Three years?
Yes.
You're kidding me. Three. Boy, that's terrific.
I'd be glad to talk about that.
Okay, and Mike.
I was just going to say, it sounds like they could fill the admission just from the cousins and relatives of U.S. Grant.
We've had a few relatives show up already.
Steve,
yeah.
When you were reading that biography of General Grant, I thought it was wonderful, but I don't think Jesse was such a wonderful father, though. Did you get that impression, too?
He was a much more successful man than some sources when I was in school. Uh-huh. Made him sound like he was sort of a ne'er-do-well.
No, he was successful,
wasn't active in politics. He was a successful businessman. But I didn't think he might have been the easiest of men to live with.
Well, the other thing that I thought about that biography that was so interesting was that Mrs. Lincoln didn't like Mrs. Grant, and Mrs. Grant didn't like Mrs. Lincoln, and were so glad they didn't like each other, because what would have happened that night at Ford Theater?
Exactly, yeah. Mrs. Grant found a reason why they couldn't join the Lincolns play. Yes,
thank you
true.
For that. And they were so nasty about Mrs. Grant.
Yes.
Here's another clock. Or is that Mike?
That's me.
Oh, that's Mike. He's got to check the traffic and everything. We'll be right back. Our special guest is Steve Jackson from the Grant Sawyer House in Grove City, Ohio. Hello, everybody. Let me reintroduce you to Mr. Steve Jackson from Grove City, Ohio. And I'm Frank Farmer Loomis. We're talking to Steve today about the Grant Sawyer House that had been in the Grant family for six generations. And Steve was telling us, Steve, can we start repeating? I just love that story about the lady that lived there 94 years and then that began the restoration when she gave the key to the city.
Yeah, I'll be glad to. Ruth was born in 1915, when she was four, they moved into the house. They inherited her parents, Sawyer and her husband Clarence, and they lived there for quite a number of years. And then in 1983, Ruth inherited the house. She had lived, of course, grew up in the house. She graduated class of 1934. We have her graduation portrait in the upstairs hallway.
Oh, this is terrific. Uh-huh.
And that's one of the exceptions to the 1840-1880 rule. But she inherited the house, and then she had lived there off and on a few times over the years, and then inherited and lived there the final part of her life.
Uh-huh.
And she was passionate about history and passionate about her family possessions and the role they had played in the community, et cetera. And she was much respected in town. She was a bit of a grande dame, but everybody loved her. And she wanted to do something with, there goes another
clock. I think it's wonderful. Is that a Simon Willard?
She wanted to see the house preserved, but she wasn't quite sure. She was reasonably prosperous, but it takes to have an endowment to run a historic house is quite a problem. Well, fortunately, our city has pretty good management, I would say, very good probably, and they didn't want to let the house slip through the fingers of the community because there were several. It was in a prime location for condos or something like that, and if they had to sell the house to settle the estate, of course, it could be bought by the highest bidder.
Mm-hmm.
And they were really afraid that we had one developer that wanted to tear it down and put 16 condos and 35 parking places.
Oh, gosh. Good for
you. And so many of us worked behind the scenes. I was just one small cog in that process, but we would talk with her, and she just couldn't make up her mind what she wanted to do. And fortunately, about 3 weeks before her passing, and she didn't realize that, I should think she knew it was coming, but she finally agreed to sign the documents to turn the house, there was a financial transaction as well,
mm-hmm.
To turn the house over to the city and the Historical Society, and then began the project to restore the house, because the house had been remodeled twice, and obviously a woman who was 98 years of age, the last years of her life, she had increasing problems trying to keep the place maintained.
Mm-hmm.
And so it needed a lot of work. And the city was willing to set aside the money to help us do it.
Good for them.
And then we got a top-rate restoration team, and they came in and did the, you know, paint examination, archaeological examination, to make sure that we got everything right. And we've been told by people that have seen the house, they think we have done quite well.
It looks true. So you got involved with the house at that point. Mike's looking at your website here, all the work that was done there, right, Mike?
I have been president of the Historical Society for 15 years here. We have a very active Historical Society. And we own a museum in town. We have a village south of town. This was our first foray into restoring a whole house. And we assembled a good team of city workers and Historical Society members and a little help from time to time from the Ohio Historical Society or High History Connection, if you prefer that. And, of course, then our White House connections. And a lot of people worked very hard, and it was quite a great day to when we opened the house July the 1st of this, not this summer, but past summer, so summer of 2017.
Mm-hmm. It's incredible. And so do you do a lot of the tours yourself?
Yes. There's a pool of 37 members of the Historical Society that have taken docent training.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of mix and match whoever's available on a given day or a given part of a day. Sometimes we change people from one tour to the next, you know, if they have something they have to do. And we have a guidebook that, you know, outlines what they should cover. But we also let them talk about the things that interest them most, because I think that makes them more interesting guides if they have something they're passionate about. So
I think that it's terrific that you got 37 docents, because that's a very hard job to do, to be a docent.
It is hard. And we have some that are, you know, we usually have two or three docents at a time to run the house on that day. And some of them prefer more behind-the-scenes kind of roles, and others prefer to be right out front talking to people.
I know you're terrific, and it takes a lot of energy to remain fresh and not robot-y, you know, sounding like a robot.
Right.
Never mind, we won't go into that. But so I understand. So just 3 years it took to this house from start to finish.
Yes,
that's phenomenal, isn't it?
Yeah, it is phenomenal. From the time we acquired the house to the time we opened it, it was just almost exactly 3 years.
That has got to be a record. So, Steve, let me give this number, area code 614-277-3061.
Yes.
Oh, there we go again. Area code 614-277-3061. And that's where they tell us again what we do with that number?
You'll request a tour. You just simply tell the person that's handling it at the museum what day you want to come on and what time, and they'll tell you if there's a vacancy, and we usually have vacancies most of the time, and they'll give you instructions. It's a $5 charge to tour the house per person, except for 12 and under, and all the money that we raise goes to buying more things for the collection for the house.
And in honor of our first caller, it's usually a white cotton tablecloth then.
And in honor of our first caller, it's a white cotton tablecloth.
I swear that I have read somewhere, you would maybe know this, it was either the French criticizing the British or the British criticizing the French, you know, either or, it's going to be one of those, about that they hid their mahogany tables under tablecloths.
I think it's
the French doing that?
English criticizing the French, but I'm not sure.
About the tablecloth.
Yes.
I think you're right, because like when you watch Downton Abbey and all those things, they just had that little placemat, and you're looking at all that gorgeous mahogany, and you're worried about getting rings on it and everything. So I think that's what I thought too, that they said that the French used too many tablecloths and everything like that. Steve, give us your web address again too, because this is incredible.
Yes, it is. Our website is Grove City History, all small case, just one continuous word, @gmail.com.
And in the last minute or so, is there anything else you want to leave us with? I know what I'll
leave you with.
Yes, go ahead.
I think a nice quote.
Good.
On the a phone call that I mentioned to you that I made to William Seal about
yes.
the tablecloth.
Yes.
He answered my question, and usually he emailed me, and in this case he called me back. He answered my question, and he said, before I go, he said, I just have two words to say to you besides, you've done a wonderful job, and he said, what I want you to do now, and the two words were, rejoice, rejoice.
That's terrific.
Isn't that terrific?
Have fun.
There's Steve right there in the one picture. I found your picture behind a podium.
Oh, there's Steve. Steve.
I spent a fair amount of time behind podiums.
Steve, you're not teaching history anymore. Well, you are teaching history, but not in schools.
And not in the standard way, yeah.
No, you're doing it in the standard. And, you know, listening to Steve, everybody, and we've interviewed people from, we have a Benjamin Henry Latrobe house in Cincinnati area.
Yes.
And Russ was saying the trouble with history books and history these days, they take all the fun out of it. So Steve Jackson with William Seal saying, rejoice, rejoice. You can tell that with Steve Jackson with the Grant Sawyer House that there's a lot of fun when people come see you.
We try to make them welcome, and we try to have a good time.
Steve, maybe we can talk later in the year towards Christmas and hear about that. Thank you very, very much. It's been just a sheer joy to have you on the show today.
Well, it's been great fun for me, and anytime you're interested, just give us a call.
I shall. Thank you. And that's the Grant Sawyer House in Grove City, Ohio. And I'm Frank Farmer Loomis. I hope you have a fun weekend this weekend.